Hey, this is Free Speech Radio in New York City, non-gag ruled WBAI in New York City. Hey, did you hear the joke about the WBAI dirty laundry? Oh, you probably heard it. It's just an old dirty gag.
When they come to take you down, when they bring that wagon round, when they come to call on you and tie your poor body down, oh, just one thing I ask, oh, just one thing for me. Please forget you knew my name, my darling, sugary. Shake it, shake it, sugary. Just don't tell them that you know me. Shake it, shake it, sugary. Just don't tell them that you know me.
Maybe I'll meet you Bob, I was listening at about 1 o'clock, and I tried to get on the air, and I couldn't get on.
The phones so are ringing. I can't get the phones on the air this morning.
Am I on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, good. So I decided to come on down because the it was obvious that the party was here. It was obvious that the feelings were good. The feelings were great. It was obvious that everyone was so glad you were back, Bob. And you know, when you were off the air, I remember saying to you, you're going to be back really soon, Bob. But in my heart, I really wasn't sure if that would happen. So it's just so good that it's really happening. It's like a dream. It's wonderful. And I very much agree with Andrea that there's a lot of work to do, and that I think the listeners are going to have to get much, much more involved and be allowed to be much, much more involved. And the last thing I want to say is it was so great to just that the station's open, that there, you know, there aren't a million guards, there aren't gag rules, there aren't chains, there aren't surveillance cameras. It's like an open station, and there's even stuff up on the walls now. It's not as sterile as it was when you first moved in here. And sitting here in a room full of people, and I just think that this is a great, great night. I don't know what else to say.
Well, it's really nice to see you up here again, friend. I mean, there have been many hours that we spent up here when you were talking about one community emergency or need or another.
Yeah.
And then I saw you downstairs in those demonstrations, and I despaired of ever bringing the community up here again.
Yeah, right.
But, hey, here we are.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful. The most wonderful achievement of this whole struggle for me has been the transparency that we now see, where the Pacifica Foundation is conducting its business in public.
Right.
It's wonderful. It used to be that people would go behind closed doors, they would go into executive session, they would come out and tell us what had been decided for our radio station. And now it's quite different. It's quite different. Sean, you want to say something?
Hi, this is Sean Rhodes, host and producer and engineer of Rock On, heard on WBAI on a monthly basis. And I'd like to thank Bob for coming back to the airwaves and doing it in such a class act way. It's nice to have you back where you belong, to quote the words of a famous song. And yes, I agree with a lot of the sentiment that this is a victory. However, this is a victory for this first stage. There's still more work to be done. And the next stage in particular, we now have to work on lab elections of the local advisory board, which were mandated by the terms of the settlement of the four lawsuits. So that has to take place within this next year. And then 3 months after that, elections for the Pacifica National Board. So we've got our work cut out for us. And I would hope that producers continue this relationship, this connection that was created with the community. Because as you see, it's the efforts of the community in large that brought the producers back. So I would hope that relationship
continues. That's the way the whole thing was designed. The community was supposed to be the determiner of what happened on the air. The community would fund what it wanted on the air, and the community would withdraw its support from what it didn't want on the air. And somehow that got lost in the last year.
Or so.
We heard people say, well, it's a community-supported radio station, not a community-run radio station. Remember hearing those words? You know, the hairs rose on the back of my neck when I heard that. David Amram, you've been swinging since the beginning, man. You were one of the first people that ever came up to be on the air with me. You and Jeremy Steig, those long, long nights of jazz and improvisation, and Jeremy pouring water in front of the microphone, and things would sprout right in front of us. I remember.
One of our greatest nights was when Jerry Jeff Walker, after he'd written Mr. Bojangles, and Odetta came up, and we were supposed to play, and Jerry Jeff Walker and Odetta were there, and we got there, I guess, about 2 o'clock. That's when you really went on long, and you were having some fantastic philosophic discussion with somebody. At about 5 o'clock, Odetta said, well, Jerry Jeff and Dave, I am retiring. I've been here 3 hours, and I love the station, but I have to get some sleep.
And so Dana's been calling, you know.
I know.
I hear her voice every once in a while.
And we had her 70th birthday, right after my 70th birthday, which was a year ago. WBAI actually hosted that event. That was the last time before the unfortunate year of the blank that just has followed, which has certainly been forcibly changed. But remember, Jerry Jeff and I played from about 6 o'clock till 6:45, and we got some waffles. And the great thing was that Odetta, Jerry Jeff, myself, any of us that came up there, if we came to play, we never got around to playing, that was fine too, because whatever else was happening was always interesting and spontaneous and beautiful. And a lot of the colleges and schools that I go to when I conduct symphonies or play jazz or do spoken word performances or whatever role I'm in around the country, I'm constantly seeing and very often going on different radio stations, and so many of them have been influenced by you. Mm-hmm. And by Steve Post and Larry Josephson and Amy Goodman and so many of the people who have been here. I couldn't mention everybody. It would be a long, long list of people not only who have contributed so much to the art of broadcasting, because when Mark Radio, I don't think it was designed just to be some kind of a machine to sell carcinogenic products. It was supposed to share information, to give people enlightenment, to form a sense of community, to bring people together as a way of communication and interaction. And so many of the college stations and so many people in broadcasting have been influenced by what you've done and what so many people at the station has been, a source of creativity that's sometimes hard to see, and also a source of information and knowledge and fun and enjoyment and happiness and laughter, as well as all the serious issues that are discussed. And it's wonderful to see it come back. And like anything, I think it's going to be, Dostoevsky said, salvation through suffering. Some of us would rather have less salvation and less suffering. Because of the suffering, the salvation, in the Dostoevskian sense, can really make the station and everyone involved, from the people who are on the air again, to the listeners, the new listeners and the new people who come on the air, even stronger and more committed and more sensing that united we do stand, and the people do have a voice, and that if everyone can commit something, either energy, emails, money, phone calls, concern, any way that we can do anything, we can make the whole greater New York area that WBAI goes to, and every place in the world now that you can hear WBAI, stronger from what is achieved here. So I think all of us who love the station now have more respect and more love. And as I mentioned very early in the evening, like everyone else, I would turn it on every day for the last year, hoping there'd be some kind of miracle. When they finally had those meetings a few days ago, I was listening, driving in the car. I slowed down. I was about to drive the car off the road. It was so exciting to hear that. And I kept thinking, oh, my gosh, maybe they're going to change their mind or something's going to happen. And sure enough, justice did triumph this one time. And it was just said, Sean just said, we have to work harder now than ever and continue the work to make sure that what's been achieved will remain and what can be achieved will be achieved if we all work together. And I believe that's going to happen. And I'll be there for every benefit and ride and anything where I can contribute my little bit. And so will an army of other people, like the great musicians who played here tonight, all the people who showed up at the station, all the thousands of listeners, all the people who are calling right now. You can see all the phones lit up. It's a joyous day and a joyous week and a joyous new year for New York.
Amen. Here, here. Thank you. David Henry. And soon we got to, as soon as I finish reading this book that you just gave me tonight, your new book, Offbeat, collaborating with Kerouac. We're going to do a program about that. It looks like it's going to be a good read. I see pictures in it of you with Robert Frank and Floyd Red Crow Westerman and Larry Rivers and Gregory Corso and Kerouac and Billy Taylor, Clark Terry, Dizzy Gillespie. I mean,
and one with Patti Smith.
Yeah, Patti Smith. And there you are at Kerrville, with Willie Nelson and Vic Juris and Victor Venegas and Candido and Johnny Almendra and Jerry Dudgeon. Whoa, David, you've known a lot of really great people there, for sure. And they're in the book, huh? Thank you.
You're going to do one about, are you going to do a book or any remembrances of people like Leonard Bernstein? I believe you studied under Leonard Bernstein. Or Aaron Copland, did you ever study under Copland?
No, I knew him and admired. I was the first composer in residence in the Philharmonic back in 66, 67. Bernstein chose me and I spent a whole year there, which was really great. And in fact, I quoted Leonard Bernstein in the book, how he felt about Jack Kerouac as a lyric writer, and how Bernstein, as a lyric composer who loved jazz and Latin music in the 50s and was trashed by a lot of the more snobbish, uptight musical types who never opened up their minds and hearts to living in the American continent and appreciating the treasures of jazz and Latin music, thought Bernstein must be nuts if he was a great classical European-style musician to be writing pieces that use these idioms and elements. I think one of the reasons he chose me as the composer in residence was he wanted to encourage people living in this country to celebrate the beautiful traditional classical musics of this country, Native American music and Latin American music and jazz. And he had an open mind and an open heart. And of course, Kerouac was the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And WBAI is the kind of a station that I think creates an atmosphere where we can all appreciate the beautiful myriad of cultures that we have, and that each culture, each language, each music, each people's, each way of life is individual. It doesn't have to be homogenized and Burger King-ized into one fast food slop death trip.
Well, one thing, if I can just say it, you know, because a lot of people might be a little confused out in Radio Land about this guy, David Amram, playing great jazz flute, jazz piano, vocal improvisations, hearing that he's this classical composer. See, I consider David Amram like one of the three great soulful 20th century, you know, dare I say it, Jewish composers, and I would, you know, that have influenced, I mean, four. I'd say, let's put four of them. I'd say it started with Gershwin, it went to Aaron Copland, it went to Leonard Bernstein, and then the very soulfulness of David Amram's symphonic music, his movie scores, his amazing classical music is like, you know, if you haven't heard his symphonies, his symphonic work, his soundtracks to movies, movies like the Arrangement and other Ilya Kid. Oh, I shouldn't say that name. Some people don't like it. So you're just a beautiful classical composer, and I hope you're still doing that.
Oh yeah, I know you released
a bunch of your albums. I mean, put out a bunch of your symphonies in the last year or two. I just bought a few CDs.
Oh, thank you,
you're out there on Radio Land, and they're going, wait a second, is this guy telling me the truth? This guy that knew Kerouac, this bebopper, one of the great classical American composers? Yes, folks, this man is damn rare.
Well, thank you. I just finished the flute concerto for James Galway, and I'm writing a piece with Frank McCourt now, called Misa Manhattan for chorus and orchestra. And that composition is really my main thing. It always has been. And in the process of surviving, I've learned to play a bunch of instruments and conduct and perform and improvise. And I love doing that. And that actually gives you more materials and more understanding of music from being around musical people, just like it was a thrill to play with you. And each time you play with someone else that you've never even met, you learn from them and you gain in yourself more musicality. So when you're sitting in a room writing it and you listen back to it, you know whether it's natural or not, if it really sounds for real, because you have a concept of what being for real is. If you're just sitting with a slide ruler or a computer, in the more academic circumstances where they take beautiful musics and put them in a bottle of formaldehyde like they put an anthropologist would put a skull of a person in a bottle, I think that takes away from what music is about. Music sources and roots all come from real life. So my symphony music, I hope, reflects that. And usually with the symphony music, it takes 50 or 60 years for it to get started. So some of my pieces, like The Manchurian Candidate, came out 36 years after, on CD after I did the score. Someone said, how did it feel to wait that long? I said, well, as they say in the vernacular in New York City, what's the rush? And secondly, Moses was in the desert for 40 years, so I'm 4 years ahead of schedule. And as far as being a soulful Jewish composer, I take that as a compliment, because what they say in Hebrew, the neshoma, or the soul, which is a universal thing, everyone has, and each of us have our own reverberations, our own ancestry, and those are precious. And with all the different kinds of music I write, based on Native American music and Middle Eastern music and jazz and Latin music, I've also written a lot of music based on the Jewish tradition. And if you can't celebrate and appreciate and be proud and happy with your own roots, you'll never be able to appreciate what anybody else does.
Blacks and Jews, blacks and Jews, marching down to Mississippi two by two. One says y'all, the other says you. Come back together now, blacks and Jews. Blacks and Jews, blacks and Jews, both got rhythm and both got the blues. One's a lawyer when the other's accused. Come back together now, blacks and Jews. Old Ike Turner never was a learner. Beats his a baby when it touches his burner. My ringtone on the Morse belt phone, telling Sam you made the pants too long. Blacks and Jews, blacks and Jews, can't seem to stay off the evening news. One does money, the other loses shoes. Come on back together now, blacks and Jews. Blacks and Jews, egg rolls, the other barbecues. One loved their mother, the other loved their mammy. One close in Harlem, the other Miami. Blacks and Jews, blacks and Jews, can't seem to stay off the evening news. Somebody said I'm on a short.
Oh,
boy.
Murder!
Loud, he can't hear you.
That's right.
Murder!
Murder! Murder!
Murder!
Murder!
Murder!
Murder!
Say it to the microphone. Come. Come quick. 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 Over here. Over here. Quick. Quick. Ooh. Now sit here. Say bye-bye. Say bye-bye to the microphone.
Bye-bye.
Again.
Bye-bye.
More.
Hello.
FM, WBAI, listener-sponsored, listener-fought-for radio in Nueva York.
The assassination of Patrice Lumumba and Laurent Kabila. The Patrice Lumumba Coalition, in conjunction with the December 12th movement, Africans Helping Africans, and Africa Kaleidoscope, will present an African internationalist forum on the struggle in the Congo, exposing the plot of foreign interest groups to assassinate Patrice Lumumba and Laurent Kabila, mobilizing to end the genocide of over 20 million people and Western imperialism, rape, and plunder of Africa's richest country. Friday, January 18th, from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Averia Dempsey Center, 127 West 127th Street in Harlem. Special invited guests, Ambassadors Ismail Abraou Waspa Martins of Angola, Tetshona Tshilo of Zimbabwe, and Martin Njaba of Namibia, with Professor Yalenge Ngemi, Viola Plummer, and Ilambe Brath. For further information, call area code 212-663-3805 or 718-398-1766.
Somewhere.
stuff. Again, you're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. This is Ibrahim Gonzalez at the controls with some help from Sean and T-Dub. I'm going to be doing a thing called In the Moment. It's a pilot program, so sit back. But you don't have to fasten your belts. Just enjoy the flight. with Ibrahim Gonzalez on WBAI. Well, for those of you that are used to hearing Sister from Another Planet, Andrea Clark, do not panic. She's going to be coming on prime time, and I'm here doing a thing that I'm calling In the Moment, which is going to be a little bit amusing with music, and every now and then I might read some poetry in between the sounds that we're getting into. And also, if we stick around, I might share my recipe for New Yorican picadillo with you. Father chosen and the beloved, who was a dawn unto his own day, had waited 12 years in the city of Orphalis for his ship that was to return and bear him back to the isle of his birth. And in the 12th year, on the 7th day of Eilul, the month of reaping, he climbed the hill without the city walls and looked seaward, and he beheld a ship coming with the mist. Then the gates of his heart were flung open, and his joy flew far over the sea. And he closed his eyes and prayed in the silences of his soul. But as he descended the hill, a sadness came upon him, and he thought in his heart, "How shall I go in peace and without sorrow? Nay, without a wound in the spirit shall I leave this city. Long were the days of pain I have spent within its walls, and long were the nights." Long were the nights of aloneness, and who can depart from his pain and his aloneness without regret? Too many fragments of the spirit have I scattered in these streets, and too many are the children of my longing that walk naked among these hills. And I cannot withdraw from them without a burden and an ache. It is not a garment I cast off this day, but a skin that I tear with my own hands. Nor is it a thought that I leave behind me, but a heart made sweet with hunger and with thirst. Yet I cannot tarry longer. The sea that calls all things unto her calls me, and I must embark. For to stay, though the hours burn in the night, is to freeze and crystallize and be bound in a mold. Fain would I take with me all that is here, but how shall I? A voice cannot carry the tongue and the lips that gave it wings. Alone must it seek the ether, and alone and without his nest shall the eagle fly across the sun. Now, when he reached the foot of the hill, he turned again towards the sea, and he saw his ship approaching the harbor. And upon her prow, the mariners, the men of his own land. And his soul cried out to them, and he said, "Sons of my ancient mother, you riders off the tides, how often have you sailed in my dreams? And now you come in my awakening, which is my deeper dream. Ready am I to go, and with eagerness, with sails full, set awaits the wind. Only another breath will I breathe in the still air, only another loving look cast backward, and then I shall stand among you, a seafarer among seafarers. And you, vast sea, sleepless mother, who alone are peace and freedom to the river and the stream. Only another winding will the stream make, only another murmur in its glade, and then shall I come to you, a boundless drop to a boundless ocean." And as he walked, he saw from afar men and women leaving their fields and their vineyards and hastening towards the city gates. And he heard their voices calling his name, and shouting from field to field, telling one another of the coming of a ship. And he said to himself, "Shall the day of parting be the day of gathering? And shall it be said that my eve was in truth my dawn? And what shall I give unto him who has left his plow in mid-furrow, or to him who has stopped the wheel of his winepress? Shall my heart become a tree heavy laden with fruit, that I may gather, give unto them? And shall my desires flow like a fountain, that I may fill their cups? Am I a harp, that the band of the mighty may touch me, or a flute, that his breath may pass through me? A seeker of silence am I. And what treasure have I found in silences, that I may dispense with confidence? If this is my day of harvest, in what fields have I sowed the seed? And in what unremembered seasons, if this indeed be the hour in which I lift up my lantern, it is not my flame that I shall burn therein. Empty and dark shall I raise my lantern, and the garden of the night shall fill it with oil, and he shall light it also. These things he said in words, but much in his heart remained unsaid, for he himself could not speak his deeper secret. And when he entered into the city, all the people came to meet him, and they were crying unto him as with one voice. And the elders of the city stood forth and said, Go not yet away from us. A noontide have you been in our twilight, and your youth has given us dreams to dream. No stranger are you among us, nor a guest, but our son and our beloved, our dearly beloved. Suffer not yet our eyes to hunger for your face. And the priest and the priestess said unto him, Let not the waves of the sea separate us now, and the years you have spent in our midst become a memory. You have walked among us a spirit, and your shadow has been a light upon our faces. Much have we loved you, but speechless was our love, and with veils has it been veiled. Yet now it cries aloud unto you, and would stand revealed before you. And ever has it been that love knows not its own depth until the hour of separation. And others came also and entreated him, but he answered them not. He only bent his head, and those who stood near saw his tears falling upon his breast. And he and the people proceeded towards the great square before the temple. And there came out of the sanctuary a woman whose name was Almitra, and she was a seeress. And he looked upon her with exceeding tenderness, for it was she who had first sought and believed in him when he had been out but a day in their city. And she hailed him, saying, Prophet of God, in quest of the uttermost, long have you searched the distance for your ship, and now your ship has come, and you must needs go. Deep is your longing for the land of your memories, and the dwelling place of your greater desire.